This is DZPN, the Drunken Zombie Podcasting Network.
Hello, this is Sylvia Schultz, your host for Lights Out. Welcome to the show. One of the very best parts about being a ghost hunter and a writer is the opportunity I have to meet interesting people. Sometimes they're people I've admired from afar for years. I got the chance to chat with two of those people recently. I have a real treat for you guys all out there in Electron Land. So gather around the soft glow of the computer screen, and let's go. Lights out. Once upon a time, there was a young horror writer named Sylvia Schultz. She read every creepy book she could get her hands on, and quickly decided that third person was going to get old fast. One day, I picked up a lovely, thick, chewy-looking novel called Bad Things. It was written by an author named Tamara Thorne. It rocked my world. I went out and scoured bookstores looking for anything else by this fabulous, gory, sexy writer, an author who pulled no punches and who wrote with one hand on the throttle and the other wrapped around a Jack and Coke. She very quickly rose to the top of my Where Have You Been All My Life authors. Then I discovered that Tamara is also a ghost hunter. Again, world rocked. I friended Tamara on Facebook and started following her posts. A while ago, she posted a series of reports on the time she and her writing partner, Alistair Cross, spent in a cabin that was said to be haunted. I hopped onto the blog, devoured the posts, and then had the most awesome idea. It is my pleasure to bring you Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross as they share with us their deliciously creepy story of their stay in a haunted cabin. Okay, my head's not where it should be because I'm like talking to one of my author idols right here, so okay. I'll just do my introduction at a later time when I put the show together. Okay. But I will take the opportunity to be a slobbering fan dork for a moment here. Tamara, you have been one of my writing idols for gosh, over a decade now. I won your sorority trilogy in a contest that I entered, and about the only reason I entered the contest was because I saw what the prize was. It was books by Tamara Thorne, signed by Tamara Thorne, and I just had to enter the contest, so, just because of that prize. And I do wanted to say that, your scene in Bad Things, where Robin has already been taken over by the Green Jacks and Ricky is watching him out the window and Robin catches the frog and tears it apart. Spoilers for anyone who hasn't read Bad Things yet, which I highly suggest you do. That was one of those scenes where I remember where I was and what I was doing when I was sitting reading this book. It made that much of an impression on me. And that, I was sitting here reading it going, oh my God, that's disgusting. This is fabulous. And it's a woman writing it. And I was trying to get a career as a horror writer started at that point. And I said, my gosh, if she can do it, I can do it. Maybe not as well, but I can do it. So I, many, many, many years later, I used that as kind of the inspiration for one of my scenes in a short story, a novella that I wrote in, it's the last story in my collection, Dark at the Heart of the Diamond. and it's set in ancient Egypt, and the kid gets possessed by the spirit of a dead pharaoh. And his father knows it, and it's his father's punishment for robbing the pharaoh's tomb. And the kid, he takes the kid to the river, and the kid picks up a fish and starts gnawing on it. And it turns into this dead hand because they cut thieves' hands off in ancient Egypt. That was the punishment. And so it was all tied together. Really cool. So anyway, that's...
Oh, I'd love to see that.
Gross. Yeah. Oh, man. So I have you to thank. You may take credit for that scene.
I remember where I was sitting when I had him peeing in the lemonade and licking the butter. Me out, and I was cackling while I was writing it.
I can totally imagine that. Awesome. Okay, so now I know, Tamara, that you have a background in paranormal investigation. You have several entries in the Encyclopedia of Haunted Places that was edited by Jeff Belanger of Ghost Adventures. Tell me about your background in ghostly things, and then we'll ask Alistair the same question.
Okay, well, it started when I was a wee tot. I just always liked ghost stories. I collected them, you know, from first grade on. Mm. And then I've always been very skeptical, which is handy for what I do. And, you know, I wrote ghost stories. And then when Haunted came out, not too long after that, the ghost hunting thing got big. And people started mistaking me for David Masters, the hero in the book, who's a horror writer who hunts ghosts. This was like having my cake and eating it, too.
Hmm.
And so I started getting involved more and more in, you know, speaking to ghost hunting groups and all kinds of things like that. And I'd stay in the haunted room for it. And, you know, it's just heaven on earth to me. And I guess what, jumping back to when I was 21, we had a house. We rented a house, we were newlyweds, and it was odd. It jumped. Things jumped in it. There was a slight poltergeist phenomena, and I was convinced there was a glitch in the gravity because it didn't scare me. That's in my blog. And then a couple of years later, we had a house that scared the crap out of me when we went to move out. Mm. It, footsteps started up, and I thought there was a prowler in the house, and, you know, I had a broomstick, and I was going down the hall yelling, "I've got a gun," and I got to the front of the house where I could get into the foyer and out of there, and the footsteps had stopped, and then all of a sudden they started right in front of me and went right past me, and I heard the door behind, in the first door in the hall, slam shut, but it didn't. And I was out of there like a shot, and I waited for my husband, and we're moving out, and he thought that was pretty funny until the same stuff started happening to him later in the day. So, I really value that, because otherwise I get so skeptical. There's very little I won't write off. And those two incidents, the first house with the poltergeist energy, that one, the real kicker was I'd never told my husband, and the real kicker was the day that we were sitting eating sandwiches in the kitchen, and there was a full trash can right in the middle of the room we were facing that needed to be taken out. Well, it levitated off the ground, maybe 2 inches, and then just slammed down, and we both saw it, and the jaws dropped. Did you see that? And we still talk about it.
Wow.
So those things let me know early on. There is stuff that I can't explain, and I love that. I love the mystery. So that's pretty much it. I go to haunted places in order to just soak up the atmosphere for books, and I go to haunted houses when people ask me to soak up the atmosphere, and that's all.
Okay, Alistair, I know very little, actually, about you personally, but what was your background in paranormal?
Well, I really have none. Tamara approached me with the idea of doing this because we had already decided that we were going to write together, and we both have a fascination with paranormal and ghosts and things like that, and she approached me with this idea, and we knew at that point, we'd already decided we were going to write together, and we kind of were thinking, we probably ought to meet, you know? we should see each other, you know, before we commit to this, you know? And so it really was just kind of an opportunity for us to meet, and it sounded really fun, and I don't have any major inexplicable things other than experiences, other than a few things when I was little. You know, I heard some things. I, you know, kind of had a creepy house that I grew up in. At least I think it was creepy. Some of my friends thought it was creepy too, so it wasn't just me. But yeah, I've never been really closed-minded about it. I'd love to experience something that made me, you know, convinced that there's something out there. And so I jumped on this.
Yeah, I meant to ask you, how did you guys decide to become collaborators?
Well, like you, I was a big fan. Am a big fan. I have been since, you know, the 90s. And I decided, you know, several years ago that I wanted to be a writer. And I started writing. And I wanted to meet some of my heroes. So I started doing interviews, author interviews on my blog. And Tamara was one of the first people that I hit up about that. And we just really clicked. And it was... it was pretty incredible.
Wonderful. Fantastic. I'm sitting here with a great big grin on my face. I'm living vicariously.
It was pretty clear.
For me, it was a really, really big deal. I mean, I'll never forget when she brought it up to me. I was just like, are you serious? Are you serious? I wasn't even sure I understood her. I just had to call her back.
Yeah, well, we both take telephones. And the thing is... we kept getting on the phone with each other, and the hating telephone rule went out the window. And we realized we were making up stories together before we'd ever talked about writing together. And we'd had some other experiences that were similar that put us in the right frame of mind to work together. Mm-hmm. And it was just, we could finish each other's sentences from the start. So it was sort of meant to be, I think.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Too cool. Okay, well, the focus of Lights Out is about people telling about their ghostly encounters. So you guys went to a haunted cabin for a week, and you basically turned it into a writing adventure for a week. How did you find this cabin in the first place?
A friend of mine from when I was a little kid and would visit my aunt and uncle up in Gold Country in Northern California. I'd known her, I call her Ellie here, just off and on for years. Someone she knows had bought a cabin and then had a lot of trouble with it. They didn't even stay in there more than a night. Mm. They were afraid, and it had a reputation. He got it for a song. Mm. And so he was looking for somebody to go in there and tell him whether it was haunted or not. She knew I liked to do that, so she mailed me, and we ended up doing it. And, you know, the only thing was we couldn't take pictures or give any names or any locations, that
kind
of thing.
Yeah.
But who cares? It was a haunted cabin.
Yeah.
So that's how it started.
Okay. So what gave you guys the idea to take a working vacation there?
Being asked to do it.
Okay.
Yeah, and wanting to meet in person, face-to-face.
Yeah, it's no fun.
Oh, that was the first time you had met face-to-face?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Yeah, we didn't want to, it was a good excuse to meet, and I'm forgetting what I'm trying to say. When you get invited to do something like that, you really don't want to go to that alone, because your imagination's probably going to take off, no matter how skeptical you are. Mm-hmm. So I needed somebody with me, and I knew he was very level-headed, and I wanted to meet him in person, too. Plus, we just started working on our first novel together. I think that's when it turned into a novel, because it had been a short story, then a novella.
Oh, nice.
At the cabin, it became very long.
That is cool.
Yeah.
So you found inspiration there. That makes my writer's heart glad.
Well, you found more, because we had been... when we had first been talking on the phone, the story we accidentally made up before I realized, hey, maybe we should try something together, mm-hmm. was about a haunted cabin. Mm. And here came a haunted cabin, and so we have something about a haunted B&B in the mountains that we're working on, and this ended up giving us some inspiration, which is part of the reason we don't know a lot about the actual incidents there. We decided not to find out after the fact. We just know a little about what went on in the cabin before, you know. So. We'll find out eventually, but we don't want to know yet.
I can understand that. Very cool. So what I would love for you to do now is just tell me stories from that week.
Okay. The front bedroom. Yes. Boy, was it nasty. It had supposedly, this was one of the few things we knew in advance. Supposedly, someone had died there. I think it was the 80s. the 70s, an indigent. It had rafters, you know, exposed beams. And it was just this little cabin. It was, what, two bedrooms, a big living room, a little bitty bathroom between the bedrooms, and a kitchen behind the living room. And this front bedroom, Ellie took us there, and she wouldn't walk in it when we got there. And we did, and it felt like static electricity. She asked us if it was cold. We said no. But it did feel, you know, all your arm hairs raise up because you're in a static situation. We felt that day.
Wow.
And I don't think that first day we noticed much else, but we didn't go exploring. She left. And what did we do, Alistair? I don't remember.
We didn't really do much that first day. We were just, you know, I met her, and then you and I, of course, met each other for the first time. And so my head wasn't really in it that first day. It was just like, oh, this is kind of also weird, you know.
We'd come from San Francisco. We spent the night in Frisco getting to know each other. That sounds wrong. not that way. and so, yeah, we were just talking the whole time getting there. So, yeah, we were kind of tuckered out, I guess.
Yeah, Ellie did not like the front bedroom. I thought that for the most part the whole place was, you know, really cozy.
Yeah.
But when we did go back there, it you know, later on, of course, really
it was the next day.
Yeah, the next day was when I started feeling like it was kind of creepy back there.
That's when it started getting cold.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it did. It really did. It was weird.
Yeah. The first day there was running water, but only cold water. And they, no electricity, but they brought a generator up, but it wouldn't run. It just kept turning off, even though it was pretty new. And we had all the usual battery drainage problems start just almost immediately. He had just switched to e-cigarettes and was pretty dependent on them at that time. And it kept going out. He had to keep going out to the car to recharge it.
Oh, wow.
It's impossible to charge.
Yeah, the batteries, and, you know, the interesting thing is the same battery that I was using there. I thought, well, maybe, you know, the battery's bad. Well, it wasn't, because when we got back, but I mean, yeah, it was holding a charge for only like 5-10 minutes. And I mean, granted, I had just quit smoking, so I was hitting it pretty good. But
we didn't take our computers in, Sorry. We didn't take our computer. We always do that. We didn't take our computers in because we were afraid of, you know, electrical anomalies.
Yeah. Mm. It was the e-cigarette thing, the generator, and then I think it was the second day we both started feeling really tired, and it was it was a strange kind of tired. It was not like, oh, I'm sleepy, and of course a lot of stuff happened, and travel and all that, so it would make sense, but it was like really, you know, like when you're so tired that your skin hurts, you almost feel like you're getting sick.
Yeah.
It was like that. Like, I could just sleep and sleep, and yet I wasn't getting sick, you know.
We were nodding off for no reason at all.
It was and I remember my cheeks being really warm, like I had exerted a lot of energy.
We both had red cheeks.
Yeah, and we weren't doing anything. But it was just, that was really strange. And that kind of bothered me. That was pretty creepy.
It made us explore the cabin more. That was when we went back in the front bedroom, and it was really cold. And one thing we forgot about was we had brought salt with us.
Not good.
Yeah. To use before we left. You know, to salt the whole cabin and try to neutralize it some.
Sure.
We went, we went into town that day, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we went into town and had lunch to wake up. We were fine once we were away, and we took all our stuff to our phones to charge. And, you know.
Well, that was the interesting thing, too, when we would leave to go into town for, you know, food or showers or whatever. we'd perk right up. Mm. Like, I would just feel fine. I would get back, and within half an hour or so, it's like, I just want to go to bed. It was just so...
But once we finally remembered, well, when we went into town, we stole a bunch of salt packets at the restaurant. Yeah. And put some in our pockets, and that did help. It helped a lot.
That did help. Oh, cool.
Yeah. That always seems to help. I don't know why. It's supposed to be a neutralizer of some sort. Mm-hmm. But the batteries dying constantly, us falling asleep, the cold, the increase of the cold in that front bedroom, it's like we came to the conclusion that maybe we were being drained.
Sure.
And the other weird thing about the place we should mention is there weren't any birds, and this was in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We took a mile walk along the road, and about at the mile point, we heard birds again.
Oh, yeah. Wow, a mile away?
Yeah,
I could be exaggerating. It might be two-thirds of a mile, but it was a good...
It was pretty far.
Yeah.
Mm. And the whole time we were there, we never heard anything. We never heard any birds. It was so strange.
Mm. Yeah, and also, the sense of direction was all gone, and I think that's why there were no birds.
Yeah.
The brain was being affected. And the cabin probably sits on some kind of weird ore or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I wanted you to mention that. When you had gone out for a walk and you had trouble navigating your way back to the cabin?
Oh, in the woods, yeah. We went sort of late in the day, and I was making these little rock arrows, being Girl Scout. And but we had water and flashlights, and we left the kerosene lantern hanging by the back door of the cabin. Mm-hmm. And we stayed in a straight line. But suddenly, as it was getting dark, and, we were being stupid being out that late, but we were anyway, mm-hmm. We couldn't see the cabin all of a sudden, and we really were starting to think we were going to be stuck in the woods all night.
Mm.
But we finally saw the light, but we found this, a tree, and we never found it again. We thought it was very near the cabin, though, mm-hmm. because we saw the light again after that. It looked like somebody had carved it. Might have been a pentagram, but we're not sure.
Mm.
And that was interesting. And then we found an altar later on, or at least I think it was. It was a circle of stones, but they were flat, and there obviously had been no campfire there.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some stains like I'd seen before. Mm-hmm. When I wrote Eternity, I went to Mount Shasta, and there was an area where we kept seeing little rock altars with blood stains all over them.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it was gross. And I'd seen that big bear, too.
Mm.
Yeah, that was... I would imagine the birds stayed away because the oars messed up their sense of direction because it sure messed up mine. Normally, I always know north and south, and I get queasy when I lose it, and oh boy, did I lose it.
Mm.
Fortunately, I didn't lose my lunch, though.
Oh, good.
That would have been disgusting. Like, bad thing.
Oh, damn, you puked.
We did hear lots of noises, though. Every night we had noises, even the first night.
Oh, wow.
But I woke up about 3 a.m., and I was sort of having nightmares, but that's to be expected when you're in a place like that.
Mm.
And there were two big couches in the living room and a fireplace that took up the whole wall.
Mm.
Not the fire part, but this rocky fireplace with crystals and things. And so we'd have that burning, and the lanterns wouldn't stay on except for the kerosene, but we pretty much kept it bright.
Mm-hmm.
And we had two sleeping bags and two couches, and that's how we didn't split up. That mm-hmm. would have been creepy. So the first night, it was like 3 in the morning, we woke up hearing little knocks and stuff in the walls, but I remember hearing knocks like that in the walls in other cabins when I was a kid, and it was probably squirrels the mm-hmm. first night. Really sounded like that, but it was still kind of creepy.
Yeah, I think it was definitely creepy. It's, and there's this feeling, I think, that around the second day that I really started feeling, and you can't describe it, you can't prove a feeling, but, you just know when something's there.
Mm.
There was, that feeling came and went a lot, and that was, I've never really exactly experienced anything like that.
Hmm.
It's like your inner caveman is aware of something off, but your intellect keeps saying, oh, you're probably just scaring yourself.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a morbid, it's kind of a morbid, you know, comparison, but if you've ever been, you know, to an open casket funeral and you've looked down at the body and you see this person sitting there and you don't feel them, you know, they're just a shell. Sure. You don't realize until that moment that you can feel people. You know, it's the same thing, you know, when there's something there that you can't see. You're not aware that you can really feel it until you do, and then you're like, something's here.
I have never heard it explained that way, but that is really, that's really something to think about.
Well, yeah. You can't tell, you know, you can't prove anything like that, but you don't, you just, you feel life.
Yeah.
You feel it, whether you know it or not, and likewise, you feel the lack of life. And this was, there was a definite sense of something besides us there. And it wasn't constant. It wasn't constant. It came and went, but it was weird. It was really strange.
It was. I never could have stood that place alone, but with Alistair along, I could be very brave.
yeah.
I'm very macho in these situations.
Yes, and you're the one with experience, so you have to be.
yeah.
But that's okay.
Now, you were great, and you explained that really well. It's there's a dark energy there of some sort. I say dark for lack of negative energy, something.
Yeah, it wasn't pleasant.
No. And that was also the day we saw the cuckoo clock for the first time in the back bedroom, and we found the suitcase back there.
Mm.
Yeah, and we were exploring all the rooms, and there was a suitcase up on top in the bedroom.
An armoire thing, you know, standalone.
Yeah. Yes, and I brought that down and pulled it up. There's a bunch of stuff from like the 60s, you know.
Yeah.
Magazines and a calendar, actually, from I think 1964, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. And there was a McCall's magazine, and
yeah.
I looked in it because I remembered the paper dolls from it, and it had been cut out. The page was gone. You could still see where the page was, because I had those at that age. And then the blue dress looked like from the 60s. So we were making up stories about the little girl and her parents.
Yeah, that didn't probably help the creepiness at all.
No, and that was when we went in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Really, and realized we hated the kitchen, and wasn't super spooky or anything. It was just nasty in there. It didn't have a good feel, so we were making up stories that the parents fought a lot. But interestingly, this stuff was all from the 60s, and that's the decade that they didn't mention. It was the 50s, the 70s, and 80s that had incidents. So we don't know that it had anything to do with anything, but it sure made it fun. Did anything happen that night? I'm trying to think.
I don't think so. We were still really tired. We were sleeping a lot. I think that then
you heard the cuckoo.
Yes. Yeah.
But only you, right as you fell asleep.
Yeah, we got a cuckoo clock. We did all that. We went for a walk. Got lost almost. I thought we were lost. And then we came home and we were, you know, falling asleep. And I heard a noise. And I actually didn't get up or, you know, do anything about it then. It was just kind of a quiet off. It wasn't really a disturbing sound. I was almost asleep anyway, and I didn't even remember it until later.
Next day, yeah.
It ended up being the cuckoo clock. Because,
oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. That was probably wasn't the creepiest thing, but it was definitely one of the creepy things, because I didn't even think anything about it. I fell asleep the next day. We were doing our stuff, whatever. We were doing a lot of writing. You know, we were trying to watch a movie. We couldn't because, you know, all the batteries on everything was, you know, we're dead.
And the puzzle. We were working on the puzzle a lot, too. When we weren't writing, we had a puzzle to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we had to meet short because we thought it would be fun.
I'm trying to think. We went into town on the third day.
Yeah.
And we were talking about using the Ouija board and stuff, and we were really feeling pretty proud of ourselves. And then we went back, and we were working, and then, and we weren't tired anymore, and we changed the salt a couple times, you know, to fresh salt in our pockets and all that.
Excellent.
And you know, who knows if that was what was working, but it was great. You know, it was a feather for Dumbo if it wasn't really working.
There you go.
But we think it was, yeah. And so that, as it got to be evening, we worked our tails off. We were really proud, and we decided to stay the extra days.
Ah.
And so we went out to the car. I went out and got my computer, because I had a copy of Airplane in it, because you don't watch haunted house movies in a place like that. And it was totally charged up, and we used mine because it was a Mac, and, you know, they're not supposed to be as weird as PCs for this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the battery was dead in 5 minutes.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it went right back in the car, but I took it outside, and I turn around, and I hear the front door open, you know, push open, and it's Alistair, and he's standing there with a look on his face, and he should tell you about that.
Oh, please do.
Yeah, because this was when I heard the clock again, and knew, you know, I wasn't falling asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't say anything, because I thought for sure that, you know, oh, as soon as you leave, I start hearing creepy noises. You know? So, yeah.
Those wonderful things for your masculinity.
Yes, exactly.
He told me, though. He did tell me, because I was asking about the Ouija, because he's starting to act like, well, maybe we shouldn't. What happened? If something happened, I heard this cuckoo. And so I explained to him about residuals. They're nothing, right? They're just, you know, leftovers.
Uh-huh.
And so, what did we do after that?
Well, you kind of down. You explained to me kind of like what residual, you know, hauntings or whatever are, and I felt a little more comfortable with it. And we decided to go ahead with the Ouija board.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, tell us about that.
Nothing happened for so long that we're making really bad jokes.
Yeah. You two? No.
No, we're very serious. It was, you know, let's call Zorro, let's call Robin Hood, because we were bored. And also, if you get silly and lighten up, things may happen because you're not so anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. We just, nothing was happening. We took our hands off the planchette, and it appeared to shift several inches. It did move, and at the time, it was, oh, holy cow. And now we're not so sure that we didn't move fast and make it move itself.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. But
well, I think it was moving. It moved because we were, you know, is anybody here? Is anybody here? Is anybody here? And then it moved, and I believe.
Yeah.
I believe it was moving towards yes.
He might be right. He very well might be right, but there's just no way to be sure.
Right.
We weren't filming it or anything.
It was creepy. And then,
this was
the same night, then guess who else heard the cuckoo?
Plain as day.
Mm.
And it was like, what was creepy, and I was trying not to say it to Alistair because I didn't want to spook him, but all these horror movies are going through my head, like, you know, lines from Haunted, the house is waking up. It's growing in energy. It's alive.
Mm.
And so I was trying not to say that, but I was sure thinking it.
Wow.
So we heard the cuckoo clock,
yeah.
You know, clear as you know, crystal clear.
Mm.
So we go we check it out. It's not working. There's nothing in it. We're thinking, I mean, this really did actually freak us out. I think we were kind of scared silly because we started laughing and acting like 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
We went and got the blankets and the car keys, and we went and sat in the car. We didn't need to sleep in the car, but we did.
And we had the best sleep that we had there. But
yes.
Yeah, we
in the car. Oh no!
Yeah, it's my Subaru. It's not that big, not for a 6-footer. And you know, we just had this one big blanket. And at first, we were so spooked, we were giggling, and we even had our heads under the blanket, and, you know, with a lantern, or a flashlight in the car that we hadn't brought in. And it's like, oh! And we had also noticed the front bedroom was really creepy still, very cold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was earlier. But, yeah, we fell asleep, and then we woke up, like, 9 in the morning.
And that was when we really noticed the, I mean, we noticed it before, but this is when it was really kind of crazy that there were no sounds from birds.
Mm.
Because, you know, that clock thing we shot, you know, maybe it's a bird. You know, who knows? But then We wake up in the morning, we're listening for it, and there's nothing. There are no birds. Mm. And that was just the strangest thing. I don't even know that I necessarily would have noticed it had you not really pointed that out, actually. It's just, it was just weird that there was no life.
Well, I was still aware of that because of, like, eternity and all that. I love writing about elemental energy, and that's kind of what that translates to.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and we even sat on the porch for a while that morning after we changed our salt packets.
I don't think that anything living wanted to be near that place. That's what I think.
Oh, my.
And we explored the whole cabin again that morning. And because we'd gotten silly the night before and turned into 10-year-olds, we weren't taking it terribly seriously. And it was a residual sound. Nothing had moved. The clock was still covered with dust. Mm. It was just, nothing had happened. So, we decided we needed showers at this point. So we drove to the outfitters and where they have showers and stuff and cleaned up. Then we went to town and got food.
Mm-hmm.
And because that was the fun part, we had all kinds of food. We kept going into town for food. It was like a 20-mile drive. We didn't care. But then we got back to the cabin and started working again. This was like the fourth day.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't using computers, of course, so we're writing by hand and just writing like demons.
Mm, and that sounds like bliss.
It was, and I think part of it was we were kind of nervous, so it made it really easy to write. I know I always write really fast at airports, too, when I'm kind of anxious to get out of there. And but it worked like that there. And it was bliss, except for the lack of electricity, you know, or even just an old-fashioned typewriter, because we had to read our writing back after we left the place, and that took a couple nights. So I think that was the first time the door closed. We decided to go for a walk, and it was kind of stuffy in there, so we propped the door. Alistair found a big old pine cone, and he shoved it in the door and propped it open, but it was lightweight. And we went for a walk to see if we could find those stone arrows I'd made or that wood with the carving. Couldn't find a thing, but we were really smart. We had a roll of paper towels out of the car, and we kept putting each paper towel under a rock so we really wouldn't get lost. But we didn't find anything. And that was when we found the altar on those fallen trees.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that was when we found that.
And one of the stories that went with this was that in the back bedroom, the one where the cuckoo was, and I think this was the 70s story, and who knows if it has any truth whatsoever, a girl was found, maybe she killed herself, maybe she was killed, and there was a pentagram drawn on the floor and stuff. We have no proof, but that was the scuttle.
Mm.
So this kind of went with that and fed us. And so, yeah. So then we went back to the cabin, and the door was closed. The pine cone was gone, but it was just a lightweight pine cone.
Yeah but still.
it was still creepy, and you know, I eventually budged the door open, but it was just weird. It's just that feeling of, you know, whether it's real or not, that feeling of something not wanting you in there.
But we worked like crazy after that again.
Did,
until dinner time. And we didn't even leave for dinner. We made sandwiches because we wanted to hurry.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And we made the big fire, and then we had cocoa, and we worked on the puzzle, and it was starting to get done. It was kind of cool. And then we tried the Ouija again.
Okay.
And we decided we didn't need to be scared because a couple of the lanterns that we changed the batteries on, and we had bought fresh batteries, actually were working slightly. Not just the kerosene. So we decided the house was nice and safe. So we'd do that again. And Alistair had an interesting idea, and he should tell you.
Okay.
My idea. What idea?
About the stuff in the suitcase.
Oh, right. Sorry. So we wanted to try the Ouija board again, and since it really didn't work last time, unless you count the little shifting thing, which I think was real, but... Yes, but I thought, because I always saw on TV, because I'm the one, I don't have any experience with this, but on TV, they always go, you know, get something from the deceased, and oh, you know, so I thought, let's go to that suitcase and get something out and use that and see if we can, you know, make contact with anybody. And the first thing, you know, I did was pull out the blue dress, mm-hmm. creepy little dress. We were both like, no, that's too creepy.
Yeah, Rolls almost came out right then and there.
Exactly. It was just too much for me. That dress was creepy.
Now, it was a child-sized dress?
Yes. It was just a tiny little blue dress with white little... It was just, you know, like, kind of old-fashioned looking, just creepy, faded.
From the 60s, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Before he was born.
For, like, a toddler, a grade schooler?
Grade school.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was, you know, we ended up not doing that. We found, like, some big chunky... Because there was, underneath the dress, there was a bunch of costume jewelry.
Oh,
like.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a lot like some of the stuff my mom had when I was a kid in the 60s.
Yeah, yeah. So I took out some big, chunky rhinestone flower brooch of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
We decided that was probably, you know, the mother's, if there was a mother. We kind of made up our own little story.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
So we were going to try to, you know, contact her, and we tried, and sad to say, nothing happened again.
Aw.
Yeah, I know. But it was crazy. But yeah, nothing happened then, but then, that night, when we went to bed, we were on our couches, she was on her couch, I was on mine,
mm-hmm.
and we were starting to fall asleep, and that's when we started hearing the scratches.
On the glass, right,
yes.
Over my head. It had drapes, it had short drapes, like sort of heavy curtains, these green things, and it wasn't completely closed. And they were open slightly. As we didn't even touch them until then. And mm-hmm. there was scratching, like, you know, right on the glass.
Yeah.
And I said, Alistair! Alistair! And he wakes up. And I'm not daring to move. I'm afraid they're going to see me. And it's, look and see out the, see, can you see out the window? And so he managed to, he worms his way around and gets over to the other window and looks out. He can't see a thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
And
it's important to say here that there were, you know, the first thing you would think is, you know, oh, wind in the trees and trees are moving the branches. Well, there was no wind and there were no trees close enough, even if there had been. It really sounded just like a person scratching on the door.
Mm.
Or, I mean, the window. It
yeah.
was...
Yeah. Later, wind did come up, but this was hours before it did.
Mm-hmm.
We were
yeah.
up late
yeah.
at night.
Yeah. Do tell.
Long 30 miles an hour wind, you know, 30 mile an hour winds, it wouldn't matter. There were no trees close enough to do that.
Right.
They couldn't touch the cabin. It had, you know, there was... They're trimmed back, so, you know, it's fire hazards,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Oh,
I assume.
So I go and I check and I don't see anything, and then there's this other, you know, weird element to it. It's like once you start, you know, to go look, it stops.
Yeah.
You know, so naturally, you know, you assume the worst because I'm aware of it, it stops.
It's aware
so
of me.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, so
it knows I know.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing there, so I roll and lay back down. And it was quiet for a while, and then it starts up again, and this time it's even a little bit louder.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was scared, actually. I
We both bolted up, right? We really did.
I actually got scared, and I actually felt mad, because I don't like being scared.
No. We were both swearing.
Yeah, I started thinking, you know, this whole thing was probably some sort of sick joke. So I started having all kinds of thoughts. I'm like, you know, how well... You know, I'm asking Tamara, how old do you know this woman? But, you know, I mean, really, this is just too weird.
I thought, no, it wouldn't be her, but it could be local teenagers or something.
Mm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And local being like 20 miles away.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it, you know, I got kind of paranoid and, you know, kind of mad and started thinking that somebody was doing mean things to us and, you know, Tamara assured me that, you know, she's known Ellie her whole life, and there's just no way that it could be her. And,
mm-hmm.
But it could be somebody else.
It could be somebody else,
situations.
But there was no evidence of a person, so...
Yeah, but no. If you didn't see anybody there...
Well, that's a chance. It could be a bear. I hate bears, and he was teasing me about bears, because I... Maybe it's a bear!
Oh.
Yeah, like, you would have been glad. out it was a bear, and that's how I knew. That's part of the reason I started getting really so scared, is because she hates bears, and she said, "Oh, I hope it's a bear." And I'm like, "Oh my God, we're in deep crap."
I thought the same thing when I heard that come out of my mouth. We'd look outside, and there was nothing there, and we'd hear every time we start to relax a little or get quiet, it would start again.
Oh.
So it was like it knew, and we wouldn't see anything. And then, I don't know how much time passed, but we wedged one of the sofas up against the front door, and we put a chair under the kitchen doorknob.
Uh-huh.
And made sure everything was closed up, and then we put our sleeping bags on the floor in front of the fireplace where nobody could really see us through the couches or anything, and we just kind of sat there with pieces of firewood in our hands to bash whatever it was. Because, now, the wind did come up that night, but tell her all about all the noises all night. They were everywhere.
It was, and basically, you know, we would hear, the most thing that we heard was scratching, and it seemed to be at the windows. Also, it seemed to come from the door.
Right on the front door, the scritch.
It was really creepy. I kept thinking of, like, you know, Salem's Lot when that voice pops through the window. It wasn't quite that bad, but it, you know.
And the hook is outside waiting for you now. Everything.
Yeah.
But we kept telling ourselves it was humans.
Yeah, or you know, there was still the hope
that it was a bear.
Rodents of some sort, because
but
it was pretty much all night long. I think we both kind of slept somewhere in between sleeping and waking all night, you know, because every little noise that I would hear, I was just wide awake, and it went on and off pretty much all night long.
At dawn,
sounded a really deliberate sound to it, and that's what creeped me out.
It
didn't sound really random. It sounded deliberate, and that freaked me out.
Oh my!
That was the worst. And it sounds weird that we could sleep at all, but we were exhausted,
mm-hmm.
and it was just sort of this state where you're not really awake or asleep.
Yeah,
you're almost
mm-hmm.
numb at that point, and we were locked in the cabin. It was, you know, like a fiction story. It was hysterically funny after the fact. At dawn, we did fall asleep for a couple hours, so we weren't totally screwed up.
Okay.
Yeah, after we got up for a while, we went back to bed, and then we got up, we started working again, we went outside, and
this is really creepy and funny.
Yeah, so I brought a copy of Twilight because I thought that it would be funny to read to Tamara from, you know, passages from Twilight, because I know she's such a fan. So we decided to prop the door open and go for a walk, and I put the book in the door,
mm-hmm.
to keep it.
And he did it well this time, not like the pine cone.
Right, it's a little more substantial than a pine cone.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And when we went and looked around, we looked
for footprints and things and tire tracks, but there had been some wind by morning. There was nothing.
Uh-huh.
And we realized the owner had a teenage son, so it could have been him and his friends, or maybe somebody homeless messing with us. We just didn't know. You know, something that weird all night long.
And no giggles?
No giggles.
No, it was not funny, whatever it was. It like I said, it felt so deliberate, it was not trying to be funny. It didn't feel like
it was like Wendigo. I can't ever say that right. Wendigo stories, things like that. It, you know, out in the woods and the elements, and it just, you know, maybe it was in. I know that rodent noises and things like that can become incredibly loud. I had a field mouse in my bedroom off a sleeping bag when I was a kid, and I swore there was something the size of a giant rat in there walking around. And that was just a little itty-bitty tiny field mouse.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that can happen, but it sure was deliberate and scary. It gives me, it's making the hairs rise on me thinking about it now.
So then we decide to go back in, right? And, we don't see anything. We decide to go back in, and the door shut, and the twilight book is gone. And swear to I swear to God, the Twilight book we never saw again. I have no idea. I still joke about it. I'm like the Twilight loving ghost. I don't know.
Yeah.
The book is gone. We never saw it again, and the door was jammed shut again. So you know, I had some pretty sore shoulders by the time this was all said and done. But we got the door open.
And it was just out of plumb, I guess, because, you know, the key wouldn't open it either. It wasn't locked. I tried the key.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But
it was, and we looked all over for the book several times.
Yeah. Never found the book. So we got inside, and Tamara says, let's, you know, salt it again. So we go through, and there was a few dishes there, like up on the highest shelf. There was, like, a couple little plates and some coffee cups or whatever. And so we took, you know, the salt and redid it on the...
Oh, we had... We hadn't actually salted the cabin yet. We were only salted. And I think we'd salted, like, the doorway to... That's what you're talking about. We'd salted the doorway to the creepy room that night that we were so afraid of it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Good call.
Hadn't done everywhere until now. We did all the doorways and all the windowsills. You know, everything felt better except for that. That front bedroom was never... That place always felt a little bit creepy to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
too.
Joked, you know, we should just put the food in the front bedroom and then we don't need to go get ice. It was that cold.
It really was. After the first day, it just stayed colder and colder.
Mm. Yeah, it's weird.
But I always think of cold spots sort of as energy drains, and this, if that's the right thing to think of, this was one giant energy drain.
Mm.
Yeah.
It was creepy. Oh, but we had the puzzle, Alistair.
Yeah.
And we went back in.
She'd been working on the puzzle a lot more than me. I don't have the patience for puzzles too much, but she made pretty good progress on it. And this was when, you know, after we got inside, we salted the place, we worked for a while, and said, you know, let's go for a walk, you know. We did hear a bird, and this was before we went. We heard another bird noise, and we thought maybe it could be the cuckoo clock, and we didn't know, so we were like... By then we were just like, I don't even care anymore.
Just forget it. It's a bird.
even if it was the clock, we're gonna go there and stare at it, and it's just gonna sit there. So who cares? You know.
And we were also really tanking up on junk food at this point.
So we went.
It's the sugar talking.
Yeah, it was.
So we went for another walk, and we got back, and the door was stuck again. It wasn't as bad as usual, but it was stuck. We didn't prop it open with anything, but still, it was stuck. We got in, and the puzzle, and the potato chips, and the soda cans were everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so this, of course, Tamara says, you know, squirrels. And I said, ghosts. So, you
know, squirrels, I said, well, really?
I really felt something creepy. At this point, I you know, again, going back to that feeling, you know, when you sense someone, you know, it's just a certain sense that you have. Mm-hmm. It's like we walked in and I just felt it. I'm like, somebody's been in here. It was just creepy.
I felt that too, but because it was potato chips and we hadn't left food out before, we'd always put it back in the hamper.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought, okay, we left the doors open. There's critters in here. We know they were in the walls anyway, at least the first night.
Yeah.
Some, you know, raccoons, squirrels, whatever.
Mm.
And if we hadn't had the food out, though, I would be whistling a different tune. I choose to think it was critters, but I don't know.
It could have been, but it could have been. There's no way of knowing, you know. But we cleaned everything up, and this was my idea. I was really proud of myself. I was feeling really brave at this point. I said, you know, let's do the Ouija board one more time, and let's do it in the front bedroom.
This was like the night before we left, and we'd already salted the place, we were planning on leaving, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he said that, and I was shocked.
Yeah,
I was up for it.
I was feeling brave for some reason, probably just because, you know, I'm like, you know, either do it or don't, you know, what's going on here?
My attitude's always like, when are you going to be back to do it the next time?
Right.
And if you don't know, go ahead and do it now.
Yeah,
exactly. I didn't want to wait, you know?
Yeah.
But again, you know, nothing happened with the Ouija board. I don't know. I guess I just didn't. Just nothing happened with it. But that was when the room got really creepy.
Even creepier.
Mm-hmm.
It got really looking really creepy, and I started feeling really, like, you know, I just want to get out of here. I'm done. I mean,
it got dark. We had light, and it got dark.
Yeah, it started getting, the room literally darkened. I mean,
have you ever seen that, Sylvia?
I have. I was, real quick, I was in the basement of the, some great big creepy place in Alton, Illinois. And we were in the basement. That was the only place in the house that we were allowed to go in. And the medium had all of us sitting around, and she said, we were lights out. And she said, okay, now this spirit is going to join us, and when he does, the room's going to get darker. I'm like, I call bullshit. We're in the dark already. I mean, how can it be darker than dark? And she said, all right, well, he's here. And I kid you not, that blackness became thicker and more black.
Yeah.
So, yes, I know exactly what you mean when you say the room darkened.
I had it darken in a place before that we had bright fluorescence on in a haunted place.
Mm-hmm.
And when it started up, it darkened despite the fluorescence. They stayed bright. But it was that same thing that you saw. It terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really unnerving.
Yes.
So that happened in the room where you were doing the front bedroom when you were doing the Ouija board.
Yeah, and it spread.
Yeah, and it did. And this was, I've never seen anything like this at all. It was, and so now I'm glad because I don't have to explain it to you the same way, but it's like the air, the atmosphere got thick.
And then we heard something. He should tell you.
Yes.
Tell me.
And, yeah. then we heard click and a slam.
It was the front door.
Yeah.
The front door that would always stick.
Yeah.
Door opened and slammed shut, and that was when I was done.
Yeah, we went to the doorway, you know, to the living room and peered out and didn't see anything. And we walked out there and it's like, it's getting darker. It's getting residual in there too. Residual. It's getting darker in there. The even though we have the kerosene lantern, which was pretty bright,
uh-huh.
and the fire was on. And then Alistair says the thing. There's no one. I say there's no one there, and he says,
"It just occurred to me.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, if nobody came in, maybe somebody walked out." It just flew out of my mouth before I could think about it, because I'm like, well, nobody's in here. Somebody probably walked out. And then I'm like, oh my God, we've got to get out of here.
It was horrible. And fortunately, almost everything was already in the car because we packed up that day.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And we just grabbed our stuff. Oh, and wasn't there... What else happened? There was... We stayed in there a few minutes in the living room, right? Because we'd never had trouble there.
Yeah,
but it changed.
And you basically said, okay, this is where the best, you know, writing comes from.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, sit down and close your eyes and just feel, you know, feel the atmosphere, feel the, you know, emotional charge of the room.
Sure.
Let your mind go. Yeah.
Yeah. And we did. And it got really creepy. It was just a really eerie feeling. That's when it really started, you know, really feeling thick.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like charged, like electrically. It was just unreal.
And then
well, we just got our stuff and left.
There was one more noise. Remember? That's what made us run. There was really loud knocking inside, it sounded like. Near us. We couldn't see from where, but it was on the wall, like pounding, knock, 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 you know, much deeper than me hammering on my computer.
Uh-huh.
Yes. It sounded like somebody took a fist and was hitting the door, except for it wasn't really coming from a door. I don't have any idea where it was coming from, but that was in the middle of our, you know, let's absorb the atmosphere and really remember this.
Yeah. Because we'd already written off the door slam, you know, and I'd been, the place where I had lived in my early 20s, where mm-hmm. there was the sound of footsteps and all that,
mm-hmm.
that had that door slam and nothing had moved. So he knew that story already. I told him earlier in the week, and it was already, no, it didn't really move. We just heard the noise. It's a residual.
Uh-huh.
Let's sit here and absorb the atmosphere just a little more.
I think it was just three or four really loud hits. And that's when, yeah, I mean, we were just on our feet. And we didn't even say anything. You started grabbing what you could.
Yeah.
I put the fire out. We just, and we were gone.
Yeah, it was like, we got in the car and I said, we can be at the coast in 2 or 3 hours. And we drove.
Oh, man.
We did.
It was great.
It was. Wow. Looking back on it, it was great. And it was a really good experience. But it definitely opened my eyes, you know, because I didn't really expect anything. I just, you know, who knows? Uh-huh. But it was creepy.
Oh, fantastic. Wow. What a great set of stories. That's awesome.
Oh, we lived to tell them.
Exactly. Too cool.
And the worst part of it was, is we got back and I'm thinking, I wish we wouldn't have done so much writing because then we had to put it all under the computer.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely creepy. We never could say for sure what, you know, was going on, or whether, how do you
gave
say
a report and,
yeah, how do yeah. you say, well, it's definitely haunted, or no, it's not, or we think, or mm-hmm. felt.
Yeah, we couldn't say for sure, but we said you need to have a geologist come in. There's probably something, you know, on the land that's making it worse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when otherwise we were kind of, and we said, you know, we'll talk to you again. And no, we don't want to hear anything until we talk to you again.
Right, right.
Exactly. And, you know, the further you get away from it, you know, the further I get away from it, the more I have rationalized all of these things. But the one thing that I try to hold on to is that feeling, that knowing at a cellular level that you are not alone.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh.
Yeah, I know you know what that feels like, too.
Yeah.
Been in a few of those. And I know you have, Sylvia.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing like it, is there?
Oh, there isn't. It's wonderful.
It is.
I like it. I'm one of those weirdos, I guess. Okay, so if people want to read the entire story, all of these blog posts, what's an easy way for them to get to the blog posts?
Oh,
The fastest way would be to go to either one of our websites, because our websites
yours, are Alistair, yours has the best. Oh, we both have links to it, but you actually have it on your website? Yeah.
I have on my website, which is alistaircross.com, I actually have a link that goes directly just to the Haunted Cabin stories, and it's the link that it says Haunted Cabin, so you click on that and you'll go straight to it. And
yeah, I think that's where I that's the way I got to it. Yeah, and that's alistaircross.com for everyone who's listening.
Yes.
Okay.
And Tamara Thorns is just tamarathorn.com, and she's got her stuff together too. And anything you need to find, you'll find there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is the best way to get directly to the thing.
Cool. Cool. And speaking of finding things, tell us about Grandma's Rack.
Woo! It will be out this fall. We've written it. Now we're letting it sit while we write something else.
Cool.
And then we'll go back to it and do the rewrite. And it's a horror story. It's our first collaboration. And now we're working on our second and third simultaneously.
Oh, brilliant.
We like it together. Yeah.
Yeah, that's more stuff you can find on our website. It'll be out later this year, and we also have a paranormally inclined, serialized, erotic novel coming. Well, it's a serialization, so a series of installments coming out in ebook starting this summer. So that'll actually be out first.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of dark shadows in there, and a lot of sex.
Yeah.
It's called Belinda.
Yeah. Alrighty.
Yeah.
Very
so
cool.
Yeah. Grandma's Rack is about witches and wars, and you'll see that if you just check either of our websites. It explains it.
Or
Facebook pages. And it's all there.
Wonderful. Alright. Well, I cannot tell you guys what a treat this has been for me. Thank you so much for gracing my little lights out show with your presence. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. We really enjoyed ourselves.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Love your show.
Yes, it's great.
Thank you. Hey.
Like, for hours.
Yeah.
Cool. And I still had the recorder going when you said that, so that's pretty awesome. Yeah. Haven't turned the recorder off yet. So, folks, what do you think? Was the cabin haunted? Or were those woods inhabited only by very ambitious squirrels? I encourage you to read Tamara's and Alistair's blog postings of their adventures. The best way to find them is to visit each author's website, tamarathorne.com, that's Thorne with an E, and alistaircross.com, alistaircross.com. And if you'd like to leave me your comments on this show, please visit me on Facebook at Fractured Spirits or at Ghosts of the Illinois River. I can't resist sharing one more Tamara story. When I finished writing Fractured Spirits, I went in search of people to say nice things about it. Tamara kindly wrote a lovely blurb for the book, which read, in part, "I consider this book a must-read if you're into stalking spirits. It's open-minded, full of wit, and loaded with information. I hope Schultz, who exhibits an innate understanding of this field, writes many more of these books, because I want to read them all." Those words meant a great deal to me, and I thought they were well chosen, because, after all, I've read everything that she has written. Thank you so much for joining me. This is a very special show for me, and I hope you enjoyed it even half as much as I did. Do look up Alistair's and Tamara's work. Trust me, you'll be glad you did. And you can always find my books at darkcontinents.com. Keep an eye out for Grandma's Rack, coming soon from Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross. Next time on Lights Out, we're going to be looking at what it's like to live in a haunted house. I hope you'll join me next time we go Lights Out.